You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with artist Lisa Kirk. She's in the Catskills in New York, moved from New York City, and tells me she's surrounded by a menagerie of animals, so we may hear some barking and I don't know what else. Lisa, thanks for being with me today.
Well, thanks for asking me.
So what animals are we surrounded with, and what sounds might we hear?
Oh, well, we have a big dog, Clover, who's a Portuguese water dog who never really seems to have enough to do, and then a little Havanese that I inherited from my mother who passed away a couple years ago, who's very ornery. And then we have a new kitten that we got because we figured since now we live in the country, we're probably going to get mice, and I wanted to take care of that before it became a problem, since our loft in the city had a terrible mouse problem, which we really couldn't control. And so the cat is usually hanging out in the basement, but when I come home, I let her back in the house, and so the dogs get all excited and chase her around, and they get kind of noisy and rowdy, and it seems like it's starting a little bit, so...
Okay.
Sorry.
So we're prepared.
Something I can't control.
Okay.
I have my son like stuck on the iPad with headphones on, so he's set. But the animals, not really, yeah, can't really do much about them.
So let's talk about what you're doing now. I want to talk about recent projects and ask what you're doing in your studio, but are you also teaching? Because you were teaching in the city, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. And then I took a sabbatical that just didn't really go back, because now that I live up here, it's too much of a schlep. I think that the it just wouldn't work out for me. So I'm looking for work up here, actually, something that's closer. If anything comes up, I'm like, I'm here. But yeah, to go down to the city with my son in school and all the animals and everything, it doesn't really work out that I'd make any money at all. So I kind of haven't asked for my job back. So it's a very long sabbatical at this point.
Well, that sounds good. And so let's talk about what you're working on now. I mean, you've done a lot of projects, and I imagine, yeah, having a child, which I also have one, is a lot of work and
it's a lot of strategizing, your planning. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. He's 7. He's pretty independent now. It's not like he's a baby anymore. But you know, I get sort of a limited amount of time in a day to spend in the studio. And so I try to get as much as I can get done. I've also been sort of getting my footings here. We moved here from the city in December, but I bought this house, I guess, 6 months ago, and then I spent 4 months being, like, a GC. Like, it was insane, like, managing this group of guys trying to renovate a really old house, which now is almost done. I'm waiting for a grant to finish the attic, which would be the master bedroom, but the house is livable, and it's cute, and it's a nice little piece of property in a really humble village, and I actually have, like, a few artist neighbors. Dan McCarthy lives, like, a couple doors down, and who shows at Anton Kern, and I found a bunch of people in Woodstock, which is not what I expected, but so I've sort of been getting my bearings, and I have a nice little studio in West Saugerty. It's about 15 minutes from my house and 10 minutes from my son's school, so I can pick them up afterwards, and it's a nice little place, and it's only $300, which you could never get in New York City. The cost
of living here is dramatically different. But also the jobs and employment is dramatically different there, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does sort of balance itself out. But, you know, there's not as much to do that costs as much money. So you can kind of do a lot of free things to do. So, and it's amazing, like now that we have this, you know, interweb system, there's a million things going on all the time. I really thought that we'd be here and maybe I'd be bored or, you know, like need to go to the city a lot, but I really don't. I feel like there's plenty to do.
Town is that you're in? Because you're in the Catskills, but is that...
I'm in a hamlet called Palinville, which I kind of think is like the center of like a light or something, or some kind of like spark, because I'm like 10 minutes from Woodstock, 10 minutes from Catskill, 15 minutes from Hudson, 10 minutes from Hunter Mountain, 10 minutes from Socrates and probably like 20 minutes from Kingston. So I'm sort of in the center of everything, but also out of everything. So it's kind of nice because I used to live on 14th Street in the city, and it was so intense, especially with the influx of gentrification and everything that sort of happened over the last 20 years. It just got to be way too much, and I kind of didn't want to go out at all. I didn't want to leave the house. But here I feel like I can really do more, and I don't mind the driving. I used to live in L.A., and I sort of like it because it gives you time to think and process what you're worrying about or thinking about, or it gives me lots of time to think about my work. So I love it here. I'm really happy. I mean, it's
well,
tiny
there's no roaches, right? Unlike New York, there's...
I haven't seen a roach since I left New York City. And I hope to never see one again. If any of my house guests bring any, I'll have to do something terrible to them. But no, we don't have any. Actually, I don't even have any mice. I don't think I'm going to get them because I realize the base walls are so high up that I don't think that they can get in. So it's nice. It's really nice. It's quiet, and I really like working in my garden, and I feel like I feel like I'm more productive here. I mean, the time to get the materials is a little bit more work, but the studio time is way more prolific because I don't have as many distractions. So it's nice. I feel like this is a good place for me for right now. I don't know if it's a forever place, but I think it's a good place for now.
So tell us, what are you working on now? What's happening in your studio in Socrates, you said, right?
Yeah, I started making these cyanotypes using moonlight, and they're sort of abstractions. I'm using different objects. They look very formal in a way, but they're really in their experimental stage. I just got picked up by another gallery called Efrain Lopez that just opened up in Chicago, and they're taking me to the Material Fair, which is exciting. So I have to punch out a bunch of work for him. I'm hoping that these things work. Actually, the moon's just about full, so I've got a bunch of stretchers prepared to go out there into the night and work on collecting these shadows. They're basically like shadows cast from moonbeams. And I'm sort of figuring out, like, I don't know, I'm like, you know, it's a whole new body of work, so I'm just figuring it out. But I also... recently I was saying, you know, I should probably curate another show. I haven't done one in 10 years. And I feel like here it could work because in New York, when I was curating, whatever, 10 years ago, it wasn't so saturated. There weren't so many curators. It wasn't really like, I mean, I don't even know that everybody knew what a curator was at the time. And so it just became uninteresting to me because there were too many people who were doing it professionally. I was just sort of doing it because I thought it was another way to kind of talk about my ideas. But now that I'm here, I've been thinking about it. And one afternoon, I've been working with another artist called Mien Bernerman, who is Austrian and used to show in New York City, but she doesn't have a gallery there now. But she shows a lot in Europe. And we're doing sort of a collaborative project together. And that one afternoon we were in the studio together and I was saying, like, I really think I should probably curate a show. I should do something. Like, I feel like there's so many people here. It would be really cool to just do, like, a neighborhood show. And then that night I came home and I got a call from somebody who came to my yard sale who was like, I think there's the perfect situation for you. Like, this woman has this space in Catskill and she wants to find somebody to do a project. And so I went and I met with them and it's a beautiful space. And now... because I realized that I don't really have the time or the energy to, at my age, I guess, but to really fully invest myself in curating a major project. But I've been entertaining it, and then spoke to my friend Lori DiChiara.
But that would be curated. But just understand that would be a curated project where you are now, somewhere in the Catskill.
In the town of Catskill. Which is like 8 minutes from Hudson, and I think it's kind of like the East Village of Hudson was New York, because Hudson's become so inundated with creative people and affluent people that, you know, there's, I think there's like five or six galleries and a couple that are considered, you know, real galleries by
in Catskill,
the
town, the name is Catskill.
The town is Catskill. Yeah, and it's just 8 minutes from Hudson. It's just on the other side of the river. It's like it used to be a really sleepy town that was trying to revive itself, and now finally it is. I think a lot of people are migrating up here because it's just too hard to live in the city. It's just too much. But
you were already represented by galleries before you left, and are you still, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still working with Invisible Exports in the Lower East Side, and then this Chicago gallery picked me up since I moved here. So, I mean, I'm not like a, you know, not a super artist or star person, but, you know, I have two galleries that I'm working with now, and so I have shows here and there, and every once in a while somebody asks me to do a group show in some other place. So, I just...
Well, sure you are. You're not a star.
I don't think you're a star.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to define that, of course, and you're an artist that's been making work for a long time. I think that's star quality. But you're talking about income, right? That these galleries aren't selling works for tens of thousands of dollars that's being sent to you all the time. Is that kind of what you mean by a star?
You know, when I think of an art star, yeah, I think of like a millionaire artist, I guess.
Right.
Who's probably like in his, you know, early 30s and, you know, like been doing this for 5 years. Like, I don't know, our world turned into a totally different place. And I think that was part of my feeling that it was time to just get out of there because it really didn't interest me anymore. Like, I never got into this business to be a business. I just always made work, and it's kind of the only thing I can do. So I just keep doing it, and thank God, like, I should knock on wood, you know, like, there's people that are still interested in my work, and, you know, I get by. But I'm not like a bulldozer taking over the art world. Although Nin and I are having a really good time, and we're like, maybe we can take over the art world, like sabotage it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to do that. So, I mean, in a way, just to jump to the, you created a perfume called Revolution, right? That was a kind of commercial line. It was also, kind of conceptual project. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because maybe that falls in between some of the things we're discussing now, right? It's commercial, and it's not, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Can you describe
what
that is and how that
Revolution
how that
is a funny story. It was something that sort of manifested after I curated a show at John Connolly's space in, I guess it was in Chelsea. It was a show called Bonds of Love, and it was a show that featured women artists that, it was just a woman's show, but basically the joke was that, you know, why is it when you make a show with just women, it's immediately assumed to be a feminist project where there's plenty of group shows with men and nobody ever says anything about that. It was definitely a site-specific project. I mean, because he had done a show called Today's Man, and he was sort of dealing with male identity, and so I thought, you know, it was kind of a cool sort of response to my question, why does it always get sort of pigeonholed into this concept of being like a feminist argument. And so the show was really successful, sort of so successful that I couldn't really believe it. And so my joke was, oh, now I need to make a record and a perfume. And one night I was out with one of the artists from the show. We were at some, you know, fancy bar at a hotel or something ridiculous that you would do in New York City. And some man came up to me and asked me what I was wearing, because I always wear sort of unusual fragrances. And I was like, why? And then it turned out he was a perfumer. And I was like, that's crazy, because I was just saying, kind of like I was saying, you know, the other day, oh, maybe I should curate a show. And then somebody calls me and says, hey, we have a space for you, without even putting it out there. I just kind of was thinking about it and whatever it comes. So this guy tells me, you know, he's a perfumer. So I was like, oh, my God, give me your number. That sounds so fun. And anyway, he got back to me. I guess he had Googled, like, the press that I'd gotten and asked me to curate a fragrance. And I was like, well, how do I do that? And, like, I'm not really even a curator. I'm an artist. I just kind of have been using curator as a medium. But I came back to him because it was during the Bush administration where it was absolutely impossible to do any kind of action that was against the war or any of the things that were going on within that administration without having a permit or getting arrested. And so, you know, at that time, too, like in the sort of shadows of the World Trade Center event, it was really kind of being enforced for Americans to shop and to keep the American economy strong. So I was like, you know, I should just make a perfume of the smell of revolution since we can't actually have one anymore. So I interviewed 10 living revolutionaries that, you know, some were Black Panthers and there's a French philosopher. There are a bunch of different people, some, you know, Mexican revolutionaries, like different people who had actually experienced being in revolutions or some kind of activity that referred to that. And they gave me descriptions of what revolution smelled like. And so I presented that to the company who then...
Wait, before you go there, that's pretty interesting. It gave you a sense of what revolution smelled like. So can you explain that a little more? I mean, you interviewed all these really cool people, right? You met them or was by phone or what
Oh,
happened?
No, I went to Mexico. I went to California. I traveled around and met with as many people as I could find. And I think, it, you know, like it sort of boiled down to 10 that I was actually able to meet with and who all remain anonymous, but they gave me their descriptions. And so I had this sort of block of
but their
ideas.
Description of what of
what it smells like. So it was like burning rubber, urine, sex, smoke, metal, like electricity. There are a lot of different smells, and because I'm not a nose, like I have a good sense of smell, but I don't know how to make a fragrance. I presented it to the company, and then the company introduced me to a lot of different people were working on it, but then this one woman kind of got it. And so she and I worked together for, I think, like 6 months before we actually arrived at 3 different fragrances, which I brought to a show, I think it was called Cluster, and it's Katie Holton that organized it at Participant back when it was on the Lower East Side in its original space. And I had these 3 different sense that I had like a bunch of kids dressed as revolutionaries with ski masks presenting to the guests at the opening. And so we narrowed down what the most, I guess, revolutionary smell was based on the descriptions and what people thought the smell fit to match the description. And so that was the first version of revolution, and then revolution kind of evolved from there, and it continues. Actually, I just got an order from the store Cartier 206 in Berlin. It's a fancy niche store that just ordered another bunch of bottles. So I'm still making it, but I, you know, like I do it myself. I don't have like they send me the juice, as they call it, and then I package it myself with like my printer and like funny little envelope and put it together.
Hey, Clover.
Sorry, there's the dog.
But that's okay. But you put it together with you're assembling them in the bottles that were created and everything, which are also your design, aren't they?
Yeah, the pipe bomb though was something that I did with Yelena Baron, who's a jewelry designer that Leah Gongitano, from the director and owner of Participant. She introduced us and had us collaborate on the production of that. Because I did want to make a pipe bomb, but I had no idea about how to cast anything or to make jewelry. And so she kind of liked the idea. And I guess there's a tradition of perfumes working with jewelry companies. So she liked the idea of us working together on that project. And so we produced the pipe bomb as an addition, which is still available through Participant as a fundraising project for her and her.
So you have
gallery.
So what else do you have that available? But the one we're talking about before, Revolution, is no longer available?
Well, the original, all right, sorry if I was making it confusing.
That's
the
okay.
Original Revolution is a certain blend of fragrance, which was actually extremely expensive, like more expensive than some of the finest fragrances in the world, like more expensive than Joy to produce. So I have a finite amount of that. And then the amount that I have is just enough to fill all the pipe bombs. So, and then there's, you know, a finite amount of pipe bombs that can be produced. So I don't remember what the edition numbers are, but it comes in a sterling version, a solid gold version, and a platinum version. And within the pipe bomb, one gets a very small vial of the original fragrance. I met up a few years later with Uli Lung, who makes fragrances with artists, and he was like, you know, we really should make Revolution commercial. And I was like, sure, why not? You know, like, it's a great smell. And so we met with the perfume for the nose, Patricia Hsu, once again, and she created a version of Revolution that's very similar, but it's kind of like the toilet water version, so it's much less expensive to produce and easier to make to sell. I mean, it's not very expensive. I mean, I think it's like $65 or something retail to buy a bottle of the perfume and get a decent amount. I just made it so that if you want to buy it, you can buy it. Like, it's not about making something.
Right,
I think,
but what
it was
about
more
that
about
idea, like you're saying, making it very commercial? It's possible. Is it possible to, yeah, to sell a lot of it?
Well, not really. I mean, it's just so it's so weird that it's not like I've invested any effort into trying to market it or brand it in any kind of specific way. I mean, it really is this kind of niche thing. It's a side project for me, and I think I just wanted to make it so that anybody who buys perfume could afford it. So, you know, like, because perfume basically goes for about $65. So it wasn't like, you know, it's just so if you like it, then you can have it. It's not like, and it's not, I don't know. I've never attempted to turn it into like a major thing. Like, we just kind of made more of it. And if people, you know, if I get another order, I make more, but I do it myself. It's not like, you know, I mean, I get orders of like 24 bottles or something. It's not like I'm selling.
Well, that's cool. I mean,
dollars worth of Revolution.
I think that's great. And I like talking about it because it's this odd thing. That's an artistic thing that isn't commercial in one way, but at the same time has this commercial potential. So it sort of sits in an interesting area, and it's also curated and, seems to speak a lot about how you approach things in a way, or in part anyway.
It's kind of like, I mean, I think like it's probably more like a zine than it is a commercial endeavor. It's just this funny little thing that I've done, you know, like, but then in its original form, it really had like a lot of power. Like, I mean, I had a show at PS1. Like, I've been, like, I went to, what's the name of that gallery in London, like Independent or something? Forget what it's called.
That PS1 you showed the, or that was the.
Yeah, I did a whole installation where I like created this kind of cracked in perfume lab on the ceiling. Like, I totally ripped out two rooms and gutted them, and then installed this upside down perfume lab terrorist cell thing on the ceiling. So, you know, like, it.
Wow.
It definitely
like
had a lot of energy. And, you know, and it's funny because people always ask about that. I mean, I think that probably has been my greatest hit. I hope I have another one.
What, another greatest hit?
Yeah.
I'm sure you do. Comebacks are really big now. So, Lisa, bring us up to the present then. So now you're working, you have a studio and collaborations. What do you see happening next? Or if you don't want to talk about that, you could just kind of direct listeners to where they could see more work of yours in the future, you know, maybe at Visible Exports, or there'll be links on this site to all kinds of, you know, your website and everything. So you don't have to say that, but is there
I'm not booked for a show in New York yet because I still haven't made a show. So, I mean, because I really only started working about a month and a half ago, like got back in the studio. So we're not set with that. But I do have a show coming up in the fall at Efrain Lopez's space in Chicago, which I can't tell you exactly where it is because I've never been there. But he's a lovely guy. And he seems to be doing really interesting things. And my work will be, new work will be at the Material Fair in Mexico City in February. So I know that that's happening. Other than that, I'm just working. I'm just figuring out what my next body of work is. So, I mean, I know I'm making these cyanotypes, and there's probably going to be a lot. I usually start with one thing, and then it bridges out into a bunch of different ideas, and sometimes that first thing becomes really kind of minor and larger project, but I haven't figured out the rest of the project. I mean, I'm really interested in what's going on in current events, obviously, like I should be, but I just haven't figured out how to address it yet or address these things yet. So, you know, I'm still doing research. It takes a long time for me to make work. I'm like a 2 years for a show kind of gal, and I'm very nervous about having to produce stuff to send to a fair in a month, and a show in a year makes me scared but excited.
Well, the cyanotypes sound beautiful to do too. You know, where you are. I mean, that makes sense. You're scared and excited, and where you are sounds very beautiful. The garden, the animals, even cyanotypes seem like. I mean, you're using the sun to expose those, right? Or no?
No, I'm using the moonlight. I'm using the moonlight,
the moonlight.
And the shadows from the moonlight.
Yeah,
they
that
take
sounds
forever.
Great. You're not in New York anymore, so the cyanotypes, wherever they lead, that sounds kind of like this beautiful outdoor experience. So you're doing them during the full moon.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, because there's like I've started to reference these kind of new age responses to terrible things in the world through the work over the last, I guess, couple of years. My last show at Invisible had a lot of sort of direct references to the deterioration of everything from the weather affecting things to art kind of disintegrating. And then I also made a series of these aura beverages that were supposed to cure you of your problems. And I worked with this company called Repothecary to produce them. And there were different drinks that referenced healing different sections of your aura. And I actually did some readings with some of the guests at the show, like people could book time with me where I would read them and then make them special juices, basically. So
I love that.
Sorry, somebody was calling me. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
So yeah, so I've been kind of playing around with this stuff, and being so close to Woodstock, there's just tons of really interesting stuff going on with psychics and other kind of interesting kind of sage-like characters. So I've been figuring out how to integrate some of those ideas into current events and my feelings about that. So, or those things that are going on. I don't really know what to say exactly because I haven't arrived at what my response is going to be.
Right, but I like that.
That
sounds like interesting research.
That I'm playing with.
Well, Lisa, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.